Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economic. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pools in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75, 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. And so you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
But you say, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Before I get started with this video, I just want to personally thank the brother Fred Hassan Powell of the Morale Facebook page for sharing this social political cartoon which is currently displayed in this video. I always big up brothers who are artists like him, my man Will James, Alex K. Art, Chris Miller, and others, because their pictures speak volumes. They don't have to say one word because, as they say, a picture is worth a thousand words. In fact, I want y'all to take a good look at this picture, which shows a brother with his hat flipped to the back telling the bald-headed brother that he's hungry as fuck. When the brother attempts to hand him his own fishing rod so he can get some fish on his own, he gets verbally assaulted. No, nigga, I want some fish. Fuck out of here with that coon shit. Man, if you look closer, you'll see that the brother that says he's hungry got a fresh pair of Jordans on his feet. And once again, I want to thank you, Fred, for sharing that photo because it is a perfect warm-up for what I'm getting ready to bring up next. Look, last week, I had to stop past a gas station, and when I went in, I took a quick glance over to the newsstand and I saw the Washington Post. The first thing that caught my eye was something that you normally don't see on the cover of a newspaper, which was a few straggling pants sagging brothers sitting on a stoop of a building outside. I didn't have the time to read the paper in the gas station because I had to fly, but I checked the article online when I got home, and I was just flabbergasted. I want you all to check it out for yourself in the description box. It is the December 9th edition of the Washington Post, and the front cover story is a look back at the riots which took place in Baltimore this past April following the death of Freddie Gray. The Post took the time to interview a few of the residents and get their personal take on how things have been and has any positive change comes to the streets of Baltimore after the riots. And one of the brothers that they interviewed was a young man that was out there on the streets peddling drugs from time to time, and he stated that he ended up finding out shortly after the riots that there were a few storefront apartments that were up for sale and that they were only selling for just $5,000 a piece. He then said that when he ran the idea of getting together and investing in the neighborhood past several brothers that he was out there selling drugs with on the streets, all of them told him no. And see, this goes to what brothers like myself, Sean James, and many others who are right here on YouTube have been telling y'all about this modern Negro. Okay, this Baltimore brother that was interviewed by the Washington Post had a great idea and the right frame of mind to purchase this storefront property while the price is extremely low. But the rest of the Negroes that are around him ended up dragging him into the quagmire of apathy that surrounds the Negro landscape.
Shit, dude. Yeah. Yeah. Hit you in your face. Yeah, dude. Your ass. That bitch scared, nigga. Oh. Beat her motherfucking ass. She's like you, motherfucking nigga. Beat her motherfucking ass.
Yeah, that nigga can't. That nigga hurting himself.
You from Nuke State.
It's over. It's over. What I say is over. Everybody get the fuck out of here.
Man, fuck you. Let's go across the street.
I ain't Claudia. I'll slap the fuck out of one of y'all. Real quick. Just like this. What a
time. Look. The main spot that this brother was looking to purchase had five rooms between both of the upstairs levels, and it just needed a little bit of furnishing. These spots could have easily been rented out to tenants or used as cheap housing by family and friends that could have worked a legitimate business out of that storefront. The Negro just don't get it, because the more legitimate storefronts, strip mall shops, apartments, and tenements you own would lessen the police targeting you, because then you can do what the foreigners and white folks that own these places do, which is hire the police to work security at your properties and places of business. Why do you think they don't go upside the heads of these foreigners? Because they step to the police officers and let them know that they have work for them. These foreigners and white folks that own and run these storefronts hire the cops, and if they don't pay them with cash, they give them free merchandise and meals on the house, so they in turn look out for them. And half these cops do moonlighting security at these places even when they are on duty, because all they got to do most of the time is just drive through with a squad car or do a quick foot patrol right near the business or apartment housing units that are being rented out. This is why they don't give the Chan family or any Chinese youngster any problems when they see them in the hood by their dry cleaners. This is why they don't bother Mr. or Mrs. Akbar or any Arab kids that they see near the gas stations they own. This is why they don't mess with Miss Yee or any of her grandkids that are close to the nail salon she owns, because they take a small percentage of the proceeds and pad the local policeman's pockets. And see, your typical foolish Negro that would challenge what I just told you will say, well, see, you insinuating that we got to bribe the police for them to stop brutalizing us. But they, like most, don't know anything about capitalism. It is a game of economic musical chairs. I just gave you the analogy when I mentioned all the foreign families that own all the storefronts, strip malls, and rental properties. Who is the only one who is left standing up with no businesses or property to speak of when the music is done playing and the cops roll through the neighborhood? That's us, yapping back and forth when the music stops and they tell our loitering asses to get moving or catch a bruising. That's us, walking around with sagging pants and glow-in-the-dark fluorescent color wigs like this sister that you see right here tossing rocks during the riot last April. Now, she's throwing rocks and expressing her anger and frustration, but she has a fresh weave on top of her head, which helped pay some of the officers that broke Freddie Gray's back. So who is the sellout and coon, black folks? And think about it. If you own some of those storefronts and control the flow of unlaundered, legitimate-made currency that comes through those areas, you can do your illegal dirt all day long without that much harassment from the local authorities. You might draw attention from a few alphabet gang organizations, like the DEA, FBI, and others, but the local guys aren't going to pay that much attention, because you're helping them pay bills and you're putting food in their stomach. And since I brought up the subject of illegal activity and you pants-sagging clowns love to talk about how gangster you are, why don't you do what some of the Irish, Italian, Jewish, and Polish immigrants your dumbass keeps trying to emulate did by legitimizing some of your hustles and using the same police force that chases you around the neighborhood as a shield? See, most Negroes will try to tell you that we are always at the end of a nightstick, a baton, or getting showered with bullets just because we are black. But ask yourself a question. Why aren't that many Ethiopians and West Africans getting mollywopped and punished to the extent that many so-called African Americans are in the U.S.? Remember, they're just as black and sometimes way darker than us. But why are there fewer cases of them being brutalized and killed by the police, like we saw with Amadou Diallo or Abner Louima, both of which took place in New York? Why so few cases compared to us so-called Afro-Americans? It's because they're smart enough to own businesses, restaurants, furniture stores, parking lots, etc., and pay the cops to look the other way so their fellow countrymen aren't harmed in any way. That's the logical thing to do. But you can't tell this Negro from America that, because you're still living off the backwards principle and creed of entitlement, which these liberals drafted up for us long ago. Instead of assessing this situation from a global perspective and seeing that everyone else seems to be purchasing everything around us so they can live comfortable lives and keep us at a position of marginalization as opposed to putting themselves in that boat, the Negro man and woman in the U.S. will counter it by saying, see, I object because my tax dollars pay for the police not to harass me. No, they don't, you imbecile. Especially after Uncle Sam rapes their paycheck just like he rapes everybody else's. Now, your pro-whack movement pseudo-black nationalist leaders will call me a coon for telling you this, but this is something that they know firsthand. They also know that you more than likely won't view this phenomenon from all angles because you're still under the influence of the can't we all just get along flavored Kool-Aid most black folks drank after the post-civil rights movement era, thinking that all the bigotry-enhanced physical assaults and beatdowns we took during chattel slavery and Jim Crow had an exclusive cutoff date to them. Which is why every single year one of these highly publicized police brutality incidents takes place, there's some dumb Negro that says, I don't believe that in 2087 this is still happening to black people. Yeah, it is. And it's going to keep on happening in 2088 if you don't adopt a different way of thinking, dummy. Your pseudo-black nationalists won't tell you that you are mostly to blame for this continually happening because they want you to keep feeling sorry for yourself and attend more lectures and debates where they argue over whether or not a woman is God or which master teacher's philosophy is better to follow. But I'm here to tell you right now, black folks, that we don't need to attend a gazillion seminars, travel with a million other jugheads to commemorate the anniversary of a march that never led to mass black improvement, or study the teachings of some philosophical doctor with 10 degrees to find a solution to our problem. This brilliant brother from Baltimore that was interviewed in the December 9th edition of the Washington Post, who more than likely didn't even finish high school, just gave us the answer. And if you're wondering why I titled this thing Ballin' on Baltic Avenue, I did so as a way of saluting one of my grandfathers. See, long ago when I was a very little boy, he taught me how to play Monopoly. I was about 7 years old. And I was all geeked up racing around the board to buy Boardwalk and Park Place. And he said, go right on ahead. He let me do it and said, I'll just buy a Baltic, Mediterranean, Oriental, and all these other properties that you aren't even thinking about. So as the game went on, and I only owned Boardwalk, Park Place, and Pacific, I think, he had all the other properties, the railroads, the waterworks, the electric company, and a whole bunch of hotels and houses on all of them while I was looking silly. And I ended up having to sell what I owned and wait for that $200 paycheck once I passed go. Once it finally set in that I lost the game, he chuckled and told me, son, you got to own what's in the ghetto before you walk around the block. And that lesson that my grandfather Dave, rest his soul, taught me still applies to this very day. Ownership is a universal language, no matter what culture or ethnicity you come from, because it regulates the sort of relationship you're going to have with most of the people around you.
I'm learning what I can do without. I'm learning how to make it on 2 fish and 5 loaves of bread. I'm learning how to lay hands on myself and pray myself through the storm. I'm learning that if God be for you, he's more than the world against you. I'm learning that friends can leave and I can still make it. I'm learning that people can drop out and I can still stand. I'm going through a downtime, but I'm all right. Because God is working in your trouble. Touch somebody and tell them God is working in your trouble. Stop rebuking the devil. Stop pleading the blood. Stop anointing the house with oil. This is not the work of a witch. This is not the work of a devil. This is not the work of a demon. This is the work of the Lord. And the Lord said, when I get through with you, your latter day shall be greater than your former day. When I get through taking you through your tests and your trials, when you get through crying and crawling and begging and pleading, when you get through suffering and sacrificing, God said, I still got my hand on you. And when I see you pray like you used to pray, when I see you flip your plate over and fast like you used to fast, when I see you calling on my name when ain't nobody looking, I will strengthen you and raise you up. I don't know who I'm preaching to, but touch somebody and say, there's power in your downtime. If I'm talking all right, give God a praise. I never did understand how come Jesus called Judas a friend and called Peter a devil. Peter was trying to stop Jesus from downtime. Peter was ready to kill people to stop Jesus from downtime. And Jesus spoke to Peter and said, get thee hence behind me, Satan. I never understood that. Because when Judas betrayed him with a kiss, he called him a friend. It took me a lot of living to understand. You're not my friend when you try to save me from trouble. I got to go through trouble. I can't have victory without trouble. I can't have a strong prayer life without conflict. I found out that some of the best friends I ever had were my enemies. And if any of them are here today, I want to thank you. Because of what you said about me, you got my focus back. You taught me how to pray. You taught me how to be happy by myself. You taught me how to call on the name of the Lord. If you hadn't hated me, I wouldn't have made it. Thank you for not giving me the money. Because if you gave me the money, then you could say you made me what I am. But you taught me how to wait on the Lord. And you taught me how to trust his name. And when I get ready to praise the Lord, I don't have to praise anybody but him. To God be the glory. Somebody give him a crazy praise right now. Hallelujah. Touch 3 people and say, leave me alone. Leave me alone. Let me cry. Leave me alone. Let me crawl. Leave me alone. Let me suffer. Leave me alone. Let me go through changes. Because after this, God is going to resurrect me. I can't have a resurrection till I have a crucifixion. Go ahead. Drive the nails in my hands. But don't expect me to stay dead. For surely, surely, surely. I want you to get like Arnold Schwarzenegger and touch somebody and say, I'll be back. I'll be back. I'll be back. Tell the house you lost. I'll be back. Tell the husband you lost. but I feel a revival spirit in this place. Somebody give God a praise. Yes, Lord. 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 I dare you to praise him. See, that's what God wants. I thought God wanted you to praise him when you got a new car. Praise him when you got a new house. Praise him when you just got married. Praise him.
Karnataka, Southwest India, a land of temples, lush forests, but little electricity. With over 18,000 families lacking access to the grid, when the sun goes down, vast swathes of the region are shrouded in darkness. Solar energy has the potential to bring light to every home.
The people living in these areas are never going to have access to electricity. The only option for them to ever access power would be to use solar energy.
Set up 10 years ago, Selco Solar Energy is now working across the state, providing reliable and affordable energy to over 40,000 families. Selco's team of local technicians from Udupi are loading up a system to head off into the forest. Today, they're making a round trip to the Belsangadi region to bring light into the lives of another family. When they arrive, the technicians get straight to work, opening up the roof and finding the best spot for the solar panel.
Whenever we bring a solar system to a new site, we first select where to mount the panel. There are several restrictions. It must be south-facing and shadow-free. Then we consult with the customer where to keep the battery and where to install the lights.
This installation will power four lights. The solar panels produce a 12-volt, 40-watt charge, which is connected to a 60-amp-hour lead-acid battery, giving each light 4 hours life per day. A charge regulator is installed to help recharge the battery. After just 2 hours, the system is up and running, much to the delight of the proud new owners.
We're very happy with the new light. The children can now read with it, so we're very pleased.
The word is spreading. At this women's group, they're discussing the new technology. Selco's dealer explains how the system works and how to pay. There are over 5,000 self-help groups like this across Karnataka, with women clubbing together to take out small loans. Costing roughly $400 per unit, it's crucial that financing is thought through carefully.
As a group, this group has a greater chance of accessing bank funds because the bank also finds a greater security in the group borrowing because there is peer pressure to return the money back and ensure that the payments are done in time.
The meeting is being held at the home of Geeta Koragappa, who bought her system a year ago. She saves money by not having to buy kerosene and having time to work in the evenings.
After installing the solar light, I can save 40 or 50 rupees a month, which I use to pay for the loan for the system.
Another crucial factor is aftercare. Selco has a network of service centres where staff provide technical support to customers. Each centre has strict monthly targets and uses local agents.
The traditional problem with solar energy was systems were supplied in the areas and then it was not followed up with support. So what we have done is we have created these localized service centers within a distance of 100 to 150 kilometers from the customer's place. And these centers provide service to the individual customer.
Each service center has at least two technicians who tour the region and visit each installation every 3 months to service the system and make sure they're being used properly.
This system was installed 6 months ago, so it's scheduled for another service. First, we clean dust and bird droppings off the solar panel, then check float levels on the battery and top it up if needed. Then we clean the terminals and smear on Vaseline, check the current and the connections, and finally clean any insects off the lights.
Bringing light to the region has also brought benefit to local traders. These street hawkers in Bundapur are all using solar power. They're members of a light cooperative project started by a local NGO in partnership with Selco and run by local entrepreneurs. There are now over 70 stores here using solar light, and the scheme has been replicated in 13 places across the state.
Every morning, the batteries are charged using solar panels. So I take the batteries that are fully charged and come and meet the hawkers every evening at 4:30. They give me a 12 rupee fee, then they discharge the batteries in the evening, and I charge them all up again the next day. And so it goes on every day.
In recognition of the project's success and its contribution to sustainable development, Selco have been shortlisted for an Ashton Award. They now hope to reach the poorest sections of the community.
We intend to use the Ashton Award to create income generation activities to pay back the bank loans and make solar systems viable for them.
With over 46% of homes in India off the grid and many more with unreliable electricity, Selco is hoping to replicate the success of Karnataka across India.
Solar Sister Story is centered around the stories of our women entrepreneurs. So many kinds of women from all backgrounds and starting points have joined the Solar Sister. Our goal is to support them to create businesses that improve their family's life and contribute to community development. One of these women is Juliet Mullen. Juliet has worked hard all her life farming, selling crops, and keeping the house for her husband and children. After decades of cooking over smoke fires and the laborious task of collecting wood, Juliet was suffering with health problems. And with no access to electricity, she also had to pay for kerosene and touchlight batteries. She found herself struggling to keep the family going and pay for her grandchildren to go to school. Her teenager granddaughter Rita was finishing primary school and dreamed of going to secondary school. In 2013, Juliet joined the Solar Sister, kicked off her clean energy business and brought in some extra income. She also saved the money because she no longer paid for kerosene or batteries. With this small boost, she could pay school fees and take care of basic health needs. This story is important because it shows how Solar Sister is much more than just solar light. Each solar light, each clean stove transforms the household, improving family health, children's education, women's status, and control over resources, not to mention easing the environmental devastation that a wood stove and kerosene lamps cause. It's good for everyone. So far, we have trained and supported over 3,000 entrepreneurs like Juliet. These entrepreneurs have reached over 1 million people in Uganda, Nigeria, and Tanzania with clean energy solutions. We are always trying to improve our model and reach more people through affordable lights and stoves. But the problem is huge, and there is a lot of work to do. There are still 600 million Africans living without electricity. Solar Sister was created to support African women to both improve their own economic development and to bring sustainable energy solutions to their communities. We need your help to accomplish our plans to reach 5 times as many people with clean energy solutions. Join our women driving clean energy revolution.
Solar Now is a renewable energy company that began its operations in Uganda in 2011. It currently has 47 operational branches in Uganda and 9 operational branches in Kenya. Solar Now provides both small household systems, which range from 50 watt peak to 200 watt peak, and large home solar systems, which range from 250 to 3 kilowatts. These are both used for domestic and commercial purposes. Solar Now has been able to transform the rural commercial farmers by bringing products like a water pump.
I'm a farmer at Mvubu Village, Narigasa sub-count, Niraka, Nichotera district. I have passion fruits, green peppers, I have coffee, oranges, and I have banana.
Just put water in this pipe because it helps the other machine to start.
So after putting that into the water, we put this panel and we connect it on the machine so that it starts. This one, we connect it on the panel after we put on. The water is going into the sprinklers, then the sprinklers will start irrigating. So ever since I joined Solar Now Water Pump, I reduced on my workers. I used to spend 50,000 a day on 10 workers, but years by now I am only spending just 10,000 on workers. Those 10 workers I had, they used to irrigate using the watering cans. But now the 2 workers I have, they only operate the Solar Now Water Pump. I irrigate every time I want to irrigate. The production increased 2 times. The passion fruit, you can see that they are very many on the plantation. They are very many. Since I go to the Solar Now Water Pump, I get time for my family. I used to spend the whole day in my garden, my Solar Now Water Pump, but now I can get time for my family.
Solar Now, in the process of transforming people's lives in Uganda, has now reached to 20,000 homesteads. We've served systems to 20,000 homesteads. And these are people who are largely initially off-grid.
When you buy it, you have 6 meters in sucking. You have a motor here, which enables it to run physically without you attempting to use it manually. It has a pack here for spares that you need in case you want to elongate the pipes for distribution, or in case you want to convert when you're using sprinklers. It also has a handle here in case you want to run it manually, and a panel here in case you want to use it on solar. This pump can actually use to a tune of 5 sprinklers in 5 meters of spacing. Above the ground, it can do a height of 10 meters. And then on a hilly sloping ground, it actually has a distance of travel of 150. Then on a flat land, it's going to do a distance of 300 meters. So if at all you buy it and you need it for a specific kind of irrigation in your garden, You have to put into consideration that different parameters of use.
When you buy a solar system from Solar Now, you have an opportunity of acquiring the system on either cash or credit. And the credit period is up to 2 years, depending on your financial muscle. But you have to pay a minimum of 15% of the total cost of the system. And the other benefit that the customer has from Solar Now is that we have a warranty of 2 years and a free maintenance and service of the system up to 5 years. In this period of 5 years, if your system got faulty, you get service at no cost. You don't need to pay. And at the same time, on top of that, when you buy the solar system from Solar Now, we give you free transportation. You don't need to pay for transportation. You don't need to pay for the installation. So all these are benefits that require a customer who buys the solar system from Solar Now gets.
Thank you.
People who live in towns and cities in Uganda and many other African countries have some access to grid electricity to light their homes and power their businesses. But many rural people aren't connected at all. But simply waiting for the grid to arrive isn't good enough for entrepreneurs like Moses Akera. He recognizes there's a good business to be made harnessing the power of the sun.
I really prefer solar to be used in the community like this because it remains the property of the client. You don't pay bills and you don't buy fuel like somebody using generator.
So solar energy is the best option for many rural Ugandans. But being new to the industry, many solar retailers like Moses were struggling to make their businesses a success.
We don't have capacity to advertise ourselves, our products. We don't have capacity to have quality technical training.
So the Rural Energy Foundation, a not-for-profit organization, introduced the Solar Now program in 2007. Its aim, to spread the benefits of electricity throughout rural Africa by providing training and support to existing solar retailers like Moses. And they encourage other retailers and entrepreneurs to start selling solar equipment from scratch.
Most of these retailers need to be supported in terms of training so that they can be able to run their businesses better. They also need support in terms of market awareness because so many people out here in the field do not know about solar, so we need to come and enlighten them.
As well as training, the Rural Energy Foundation loans retailers portable demonstration kits, which they use to drum up business in local markets.
What we're trying to do is these people are off-grid and they do not have access to electricity. So we're trying to show them how solar can improve their lives. For instance, we try to show them how they can make money from solar. For instance, here with us we have a shaver, so they can use this to have barbershops. We also show them how they can use it to use light at their homes. See, when you have this light in your house, the children can study at night. They can use it in their shops to work longer hours, and they can use it at home.
If retailers want to use the Solar Now brand, they have to commit to providing high-quality installations and good after-sales service. The Rural Energy Foundation helps them achieve this by training solar technicians.
We're trying to get the entrepreneurs to sign service contracts, so when they sell the product, it also comes with after-sales service. Let's say they have to check to make a phone call to the customer after a certain period to check if the system is working, and then till after some time through the service contract, they also have to go and actually do the inspection of the system.
The Rural Energy Foundation has trained over 200 retailers in 9 African countries. So far, they've sold 57,000 solar home systems and 36,000 solar lanterns. They've helped at least 400,000 people, saved nearly 5 million litres of kerosene and 12,000 tonnes of CO2 each year. Basil Okelo is impressed and has decided to buy the equipment from Moses to set up his own solar barbershop and phone charging business. He's taking advantage of a credit scheme which helps entrepreneurs buy equipment from Solar Now retailers to get their businesses going.
Solar Now is giving me a loan. I'm going to make a down payment of 25% now. Later, in 3 months' time, I'll make another 25%, making a total of 50%. Then the remaining I'll complete within a period of a year.
With his system now installed, Basil is optimistic about the future.
Because this is a new investment I'm going into. I have never been into this business before. But as I see, I have the expectation that I'll make money.
Moses is growing his solar retail business too. He already had a shop in town. With support from the Rural Energy Foundation, he's now set up a small village branch to cater specifically for his rural customers.
Rural Energy Foundation is very important to us. If they help us training technician, we shall be in position to expand all over.
We hope that others will also adopt the private sector development approach. We don't want to be unique. We want to spread the word that this is a really efficient approach to get the technology diffused deeply into the rural markets.
The Rural Energy Foundation plans to expand into other African countries and broaden its range of sustainable technologies. Solar panels are now becoming a common sight here on homes, and shops buy them as well to run radios and offer phone charging, increasing their income and enabling people to communicate. And to everyone's delight, the local bar has installed a fridge powered by the sun. The owner is pleased with his investment.
Yeah, we're happy because it's cold, the beer tastes better, and so I get more customers.
Okay, we're here for another installment of It's My House, and today's podcast is titled Earth Wealth Energy Solar Village, which is a project that we had. So I played a series of videos of various aspects of solar villages in Africa and India. And basically, solar villages, they're highly independent. So they're really not worried about this type of virus that's going around. Now, there are two more audios. I don't know if I'll be, I loaded them up, but they haven't finished processing. One is, well, both of them actually are on people who, well, that have been arrested for growing food on their own, or what they thought was their own property. And my laptop is like refreshing, so let's see if we can get that. And other trending topics. This is why I have to use. Okay, all right. And trending topics. One headline, this is off of Yahoo News, $1 trillion U.S. economic rescue package crashes in the Senate. The U.S. Surgeon General says this week things will be getting worse. Jerome Adams, Dr. Jerome Adams, Surgeon General. Let's see, what else do they have? Here. Let's see. we did a podcast yesterday evening, early evening, from Brazil. John Thompson's Brazil. And he's an expat American living in Brazil full time. And you had, after the president of Brazil made some speech, a lot of people didn't like it. So they went outside and started beating on pans or whatever on how that's being handled, how the government. See, you know what? Here's my take on the government. The government can't save everybody. These politicians talk that way, but the government can't save everybody. The government cannot save everybody. Although these politicians talk like they can, but the government, at best, the way I see it, is a luxury supplement to your life if you need it. And I, you know what, I'm not even going to say if you need it. In any event, let's see, I'm trying to see if this I'm refreshing my studio, so I'm seeing if these other two audios loaded up. Okay, let me see. Be patient with me. Hope everybody had a nice weekend. I've been doing the delivery thing. In other words, I've been, but I don't feel like cooking. So you, I know the Chinese place I ordered from, they haven't been answering their phone. So I ordered from another delivery place yesterday. Okay. Let me see if I can. Okay, here we go. Earth, Wealth, Energy. Oh, well, let's see. Earth, well, I played all those. Let's try it another way. This thing takes its time. All right, let me see if any, why that's booting up. So, I imagine they're working right now. To get some type of additional legislation passed. They've been passing quite a bit lately. Like I say, the government cannot save everyone. Okay, let me see. Okay. Okay. Here we go.
I'm learning what I can do without. I'm learning how to make it on.
Oh, that's not it. Okay, here it is.
A controversy is brewing in one Orange County neighborhood over a vegetable garden.
Yeah, an Orlando man grew one in his front yard, but the city says it is against code. Local leaders told him to dig it up, but he refuses. West 2's Michelle Meredith is live in College Park. And Michelle, what's his next move?
Well, his next move is to try to get this ordinance clarified. But let me show you something. In front of his yard is a yard that looks like this, with dead grass. To his right is I-4, so he never thought that his garden in front of his house would get him in trouble.
Jason Halvenston and his wife have a vegetable garden in the front yard of their home in College Park. Not only does it save them hundreds on groceries, it's a source of pride.
Look at that beautiful wax bean. You ever seen one that beautiful and long in the grocery store?
So imagine Jason's surprise when he got a notice from the city of Orlando saying his vegetable garden is a code violation. Failure to maintain ground covers, to be exact.
It said, dig up your garden by November 7th and replace it with ground cover or actions will be taken.
At first, Jason thought it was a joke.
Plant the garden. Meet your neighbors.
The mayor himself is on the city's website urging citizens to plant their garden. And what is ground cover? The city ordinance seems vague. Says ground covers should be planted to present a finished appearance.
It's hard times. We need good, healthy vegetables, and this is how we're doing it. And there shouldn't be anything illegal about it.
Jason didn't get mad. He started planting seeds of support. A friend's Facebook campaign got Jason's front yard garden fight featured on treehugger.com. It's gone international. Fellow gardeners like Greg Clifton have rallied.
And I just don't think it's right for the city to come through and say, hey, we're maximizing space, but you're not allowed to do the same.
Jason has a petition drive going. He wants this ordinance clarified, not just for him, but for garden-loving people everywhere in O-Town.
I think the government has a lot better things to be doing than messing with and wasting their time with my vegetable garden.
Now, the city canceled a scheduled hearing about his garden, and they have assigned a task force to try to sort it all out. Live in Orange County, Michelle Meredith, West 2 News.
All right, this is John Cole with GrowingYourGreens.com. Today we have another exciting episode for you. We're coming at you from a very special place in the world. Well, maybe not that special. We're actually coming at you from Miami Shores Village here in Miami-Dade County in South Florida. Now, the reason why I'm here is because of one major reason, actually, because Miami Shores just recently, earlier this year, passed a law that says you cannot grow a vegetable garden in your front yard. Now, you know, if they did this 20 years ago and everybody knew this, I probably wouldn't have a big problem with it. I still would have a problem with it, but at least everybody would know this before moving here, hopefully, and not move here if they want to grow some food. Unfortunately, what happened here in Miami Shores is that a married couple that had been living here since the 90s that had been growing a vegetable garden in their front yard for the last 17 years, every year they've been growing their own food and a large percentage of their food at that. I mean, kind of like, probably like what I do. I grow a good percentage of my vegetables. I just don't have to go shopping. And in addition, I grow a lot of exotic, unique varieties that are just not available in the stores. And they are growing a lot of edible Asian greens that literally money can't buy because nobody's growing these things because they might not do good in standard agricultural production. And what happened to this married couple that's been living here in Miami Shores is after they passed the law in March, they got the city inspector coming by or whatever, code enforcement, who I've also had dealings with my local code enforcement. But they got the code enforcement and they gave him basically a ticket to say, you're going to get fined like $50 a day if you don't pull out your vegetable garden. So unfortunately, they had no other choice than to pull out their vegetable garden, and their vegetable garden was planted in their front yard because it's south-facing. Their backyard is north-facing, so it's not the optimal position to grow a garden. So this is quite sad that this has happened to them. They had since pulled out their garden, and now they don't have a garden in their front yard. They may be trying to grow in the backyard. I don't exactly know where in Miami Shores they are. But what I'm going to do for you guys is actually post a link down below the video so you guys can be updated on this. There's actually a suit. I mean, I think this is a great injustice that is occurring here. I think everybody everywhere should be able to grow some of their own food and that we shouldn't need any laws to pass to say we can grow food. I mean, although that's probably preemptive to pass laws that say you can grow food, because if they're not in place, then there'll be laws that say you can't grow food. So I'm really watching the outcome of this case because hopefully the law that got passed that says you can't grow food will be found literally unconstitutional. And I believe, and that's the kind of country I want to live in, where you have the right to grow food, because after all, we all need to eat. And, you know, we don't want large corporations or other people controlling what we eat. I mean, many people might not care, but if you do care, it's a big deal. I mean, the family here was growing organic and naturally without pesticides and herbicides and fungicides. and also saving a lot of money. I don't know if you've been shopping in South Florida lately, but on my last week here, I have been shopping, and prices for organic foods are really sky high, and actually the quality is fairly low because unfortunately much of it is actually shipped in from California. So in any case, let's talk more about this particular situation in this video. We'll go to a couple locations here in Miami Shores and share with you, you know, some of the things that maybe are allowed and a way to maybe, you know, not skirt the rules, but just not grow vegetables, but grow other kind of edibles in your garden. Then I'll have like a shared discussion with you guys about my further thoughts. All right, so here we are in Miami Shores, and in Miami Shores, as I mentioned, it is illegal in your front yard to grow vegetables, but evidently you can have Christmas tree lights and, you know, plastic snowmen and Santa and penguins to decorate. What if people are offended with this, you know? I think there should be an inalienable right to be able to grow food wherever you live. I think we're given this right. And I think it is wrong for cities to pass laws that say we cannot grow food. I mean, after all, we need very little in life. We need to be able to breathe, right? And that's definitely a must. We need to have some water, which is a must. And we need to be able to eat. And if you can't grow your food, you cannot provide for you and your family. It's very simple. You know, now, besides just growing standard vegetables that are definitely outlawed, what we're going to do next is actually take you to a lot that is actually growing crops in the front yard that you could eat, because while vegetables are outlawed, things like fruits, fruit trees, nut trees, probably things like herbs, and potentially even perennial vegetables that look like ornamental plants are not outlawed. It's just probably more of the standard vegetable plants that kind of look a little bit funky, because after all, this is definitely an upscale area. All right, here we're at Miami Shores and a residence behind me. And while they're not growing any vegetables, because that would be illegal, they actually planned really smart. Actually, they planted the permaculture edible garden. So what's permaculture? Well, they got a lot of different unique crops, mostly fruit trees, maybe some herbs, and maybe some perennial vegetables that aren't your standard vegetables growing that can be grown in the front yard here in Miami Shores. So let's go ahead and take a quick tour around. So upon walking up, you'll actually see grass. And hey, wait, it's illegal to grow grass, man, because grass is a vegetable. If you go into most health food stores, you could find cut wheatgrass being sold in the vegetable section. I don't know, but here it is. Everybody has their lawn here in Miami Shores. So I don't know, maybe they're going to outlaw that next, because grass, it's a vegetable. It is to cows anyways. Anyways, they have a lot of ornamentals here, you know, that are non-edibles, like the stuff here, which I have no clue what it is. But then we go down over here. This is a perfectly good permaculture-style ground cover. This is actually called perennial peanut. And I guess you could eat this stuff. It's not normally eaten. I've eaten the flowers before. It's kind of fun. Wait, is that a vegetable too? Yeah, but actually, it looks really pretty, and actually, it serves a valuable purpose. I mean, it's planted underneath this nice, huge, looks like to be a mango tree that's been actually pruned appropriately, so it stays pretty small and yet probably yields a lot in season. The perennial peanut grass is a nitrogen fixer, so it's actually fixing nitrogen and making nutrition for the tree above. And there's many different kinds of trees all along through here, you know, fairly closely planted, maybe like 6 feet. Every 6 feet, there's a nice fruit tree planted and a whole bunch of other cool things growing here. I mean, I just smell some fragrance that's just really, really delicious. In addition, we got things planted like katuk right over here. It looks like it's having a little bit of challenges. Katuk is an edible perennial vegetable, and it looks like they're just starting to put in some perennial peanut grass that hasn't yet taken root. Here's a pomegranate tree here, and, you know, just walking around the garden here, it looks like they have all kinds of different pomegranate trees and other kind of fruit trees. Here's a pomegranate. Next, we have another fruit. I don't exactly know that type there. Maybe kind of looks like a pomegranate. And then up here, there's another pomegranate, and they got an avocado and another mango and all kinds of cool stuff growing in here. Now, here's one of my favorite. This is a fruit, actually. This can be grown because it's not a vegetable. Wait, Miami Shores discriminates against vegetables. That's not right. If they ever discriminated against the color of the people would be up in arms. But, man, they're discriminated against vegetables and not fruits. These are actually some phallic symbol fruits, man. Check it out. These are called Monstera Deliciosa. When they're completely ripe, the little scales fall off, and it tastes between a banana and a pineapple. And they got to be completely ripe to eat them, or you're going to burn the heck out of your mouth. But, yeah, this is how you do a front yard a garden to grow some edible foods and still remain within the context of the law. As you guys can see, as we get off the property line here, the neighbor just has plenty of lawn. In addition, you can't have things like edible hedges. I don't exactly know what they're planting here. Possibly could be some katuk or some other kind of Barbados cherry or other kind of edible fruit that they're starting to put in. And there's just all kinds of different things growing. Since I'm not from the tropics, I'm not fully aware of all of them. So here's all kinds of edibles growing, just not your standard everyday vegetables. Oh, there's another one, the aloe vera. That's definitely an edible. Hopefully they got a good variety of aloe. There's a picture of the aloe there. Had an episode just the other day on the aloe vera. If you do want to grow some aloe in South Florida, you probably want to check out the variety that I was speaking about in that last video. And here it is in the front yard. They got some banana plants. Bananas are not a vegetable unless they're unripe. Then they're actually used as vegetables. Are those illegal too? Go and check it out. This is so cool. You got a papaya tree that's growing straight up there. And then we got one kind of like leaning over. So this makes harvesting really easy. Next, I want to take you down the side of the house since this is a corner house and show you guys what's growing. So up the fence line, dragon fruit. And they got a whole bunch of different fruit trees, so I wonder, this must be considered the backyard here, because technically if this was a solid fence, you wouldn't be able to see back there. So technically, would they be able to grow vegetables there? Although it is seen by the front, it is kind of technically in the back. They got a trellis growing all kinds of stuff, you know, more bananas up there, growing some kind of pods here along the fence line. On the other side here, between the road and the sidewalk, there's a big strip, and they got fruit trees, including coconut palms planted and some dragon fruit climbing up the tree. Definitely looks really cool. And some more fruit trees, of course, the perennial peanut grass down below. And, you know, just going on further, it looks like they got a lot more different fruit trees planted and lots of fruit trees, because at present time, those are not illegal. In addition, besides the perennial peanut grass, looks like they got some herbs growing in there, some non-edibles as well, but it's mostly decorative landscape, and I think that's the intent of the law, is to have decorative landscape things that look Florida-ish or tropical-ish versus northern vegetables. And I would concur, if you live in South Florida, you want to grow tropical, edible, perennial vegetables and fruits. Don't try to grow the northern stuff, you know, it's not going to do so well. Here's a more crops growing up the fence, and once again, you know, if you have a fence and people can see through it, grow something that's going to fill up that fence, you know, so people can't see and get in your business, plus also grow some more food. One of the cool things here is that they got some nice bananas, so check these bananas out. Like, John, those aren't bananas. Yes, they are. These are red bananas, man. Sometimes you can find and purchase red bananas for eating. They have to be particularly soft when you buy them and eat them. So here are some red bananas they're growing. I love red bananas because they're different than the standard ones. And actually, when you peel them, if they're ripe, they're actually a little bit pink. And they have a unique flavor. I actually encourage you guys to eat different foods of different colors, including the red bananas. I love to eat the red bananas and make sure when you get them, they got to be fully ripe, like super soft to eat them. Otherwise, they're just not going to taste good. Over on this side here, looks like more fruits. This one looks to be like a black sapote. That's like the chocolate fruit. So it's not too sweet, but you mix a ripe one of those up with some dates, and man, you got one delicious pudding right there. Oh, and check it out. There's an avocado hanging right over there, if you could see. So yeah, definitely a good use of the space. You know, probably a little bit too many ornamentals for my liking. But this is done permaculture style, so I'm sure every plant has a function, despite if that function is being edible or not. So this is how you could actually grow some edibles in your front yard by using fruit trees, maybe some herbs,
some perennial vegetables that are not normally thought of as standard northern vegetables.
All right, so I'm back. So as you guys saw, that episode and that video was filmed late last year. And that whole incident happened last year. And since that time, a suit has been filed with the state of Florida to turn this around. And I think this is very important to know, especially if you're growing food at home, what your rights are. I mean, this is my opinion, and I'm not a lawyer. I don't play a lawyer on TV or YouTube. I play a gardener, which I just self-taught and just learned by doing. So everything that I'm going to share in this episode is my opinions on this subject and just, you know, take them for what they're worth. So number one, I just believe that everybody has the right to grow their own food. Think how our nation was founded, right? The pilgrims came over, right? They came over, they spread across the United States, and they had to grow their own food, man. There wasn't no stores. They couldn't, like, bring all the supplies they needed. They literally needed to bring seeds, get where they're going, and get growing so that they could eat. And, I mean, I think this is one of the things, actually, that's in the Constitution. I mean, in the Constitution, we have the right to bear arms, the right of the freedom of speech. But there's nothing in the Constitution that says we have the right to grow food because it was just, that was, like, self-evident, man. And it's so insane now that you're some of these rights are getting taken away from us. I mean, we all have the right to breathe. Are they going to start, like, taking away our air, man, and stuff? I mean, water's already becoming real scarce. I mean, we need, what, air, water, and food. So I think this is a critical issue, especially in this time when, you know, it's, in my opinion, the people that have the money make the rules. I mean, this is evident in the time of the kings back in the day, right? Those with the money make the rules. Those with the gold make the rules, right? And those with the money these days, you know, big corporations that give money to politicians. And, you know, if you got a friend on city council and, you know, you don't like the lawn or the vegetable garden, the front lawn down the way, you just give your buddy a call and they pass a law and then you get screwed and then you can't do what you should have the right to do. And, you know, what is the solution to this? Well, number one, in my opinion, you know, I would live to the letter of the law. So if I couldn't plant a vegetable garden in my front yard, I would sure as heck plant some of the things that you guys just saw in this episode. You know, I would plant things like the fruit trees, like herbs that are allowable, like, you know, things that aren't commonly thought of as vegetables, like the grass or wheatgrass, any kind of grass, actually, is edible. Many people don't know that. They're going to start taking in everybody for growing a lawn because that's a vegetable. I mean, many health food stores sell wheatgrass in the vegetable section, the produce section. I mean, it's so crazy, you know, and it's just like, and that's discrimination. You know, another thing our country was founded on is, you know, equality for all, you know, and in my opinion, not only people should have equality on no discrimination on, you know, whether their sexual orientation, the color of their skin, or, you know, whatever else it is. But we should also have equality for all earthlings, all creatures on earth, whether they're plant, vegetable, human, bat, dog, cat, whatever, and, you know, not have the discrimination. And so we shouldn't discriminate against vegetables. But nonetheless, you know, because the law is written in such a way, there's certain things you can grow as food that are not considered vegetables. I think the main thing, the intent of the law is that people, they don't want you to have a unsightly garden. And what is unsightly? Well, that's hard to put in legal terms because to me, unsightly is different than somebody else's opinion. And I've seen some horrible front yard gardens in my times that, you know, in my opinion, bordering on the terms of unsightly, although I believe everybody should be able to grow their own food. So, you know, when there's these kind of like definitions that are unclear, that's when problems can arise. You know, I personally think that if you have a property, you know, up to some reasonable extent, you should be able to do with what you want as long as it does not hurt or harm, you know, physically others, as long as it does not harm the environment, you know, create excessive toxins. And of course, if you live in an area that, you know, has pre-existing laws that say certain things, you know, that you can't, you know, have a trailer that's rusted outside in your house and store it there for 6 years, that's cool, you know, but it should be in place when you move into your house. And I would encourage everybody out there to check the laws and CC&Rs and with homeowners associations and find the restrictions, you know, where you live to find out what you can and cannot do. unfortunately, here, my backyard actually is gets less sun than the front yard. It would be much better to grow in the front yard. But I'm not able to grow a vegetable garden. But what I can grow is other edible plants, like crops that are not normally thought of as vegetables. So I have videos and episodes sharing some of the ones that I could grow here in the desert. And I also have episodes sharing what you guys could grow if you guys live in the tropics in Florida. I visit a place called Echo, and I share a lot of the different crops that look like landscape crops but are perfectly edible. I mean, things like linden trees. Linden trees have edible leaves. Many people do not know this. And what, now you can't grow linden trees because that's a vegetable, you know? So crazy. Anyways, I think there should be local laws passed and laws everywhere passed that we can grow food. And what is the answer? Passing all these local laws that will allow people to grow their food? I think we need something at a more national level that is just like, you know, like the right to bear arms. I mean, we have the right to have a safe and equitable food system and have our food being able to be controlled by us and not, you know, the people with the money and whatnot, because then things get awry. So what happened is, because a good thing that happened because of this is actually the Institute for Justice actually picked up the case of the couple that you just saw on my episode, and they're going to have a Food Freedom Initiative. So at present time, this is the best thing, I think, as home gardeners, as urban homesteaders, we got. And I'll read it. Institute for Justice National Food Freedom Initiative is a nationwide campaign that will bring property rights, economic liberty, and free speech challenges to laws that interfere with the ability of Americans to produce, market, procure, and consume the food of their choice. IJ has filed 3 cases to inaugurate the initiative. Through these and future cases, IJ National Food Freedom Initiative will end unreasonable and intrusive governmental interference with our food choices and usher in real food freedom for all Americans. This is what I think is truly needed. It should just be already in place, and I'm glad that the Institute for Justice is working on this. I fully support them with this initiative. I will put a link down below this video. I will ask you to like them and even donate to their cause. And I actually already have made a donation to them because I do support this. And once again, I want to encourage you guys to grow your food no matter what the obstacle is, whether it's, you know, city laws, whether it's your brown thumbs, whether it's, you know, whatever it is, there's always a way to get over it. One of my mottos in life is that there is always a way. And I would encourage you guys to take this motto into your heart as well. You just need to start taking little steps at first, until you start taking greater leaps, until you're running and winning marathons, actually, like some of my friends are doing. Hopefully you guys enjoyed this episode, learned some ways on how to grow food in your front yard if you're not able, and learned about the Institute for Justice Food Freedom Initiative that I believe you should be aware of and fully support it. Once again, my name is John Kohler with GrowingYourGreens.com. We'll see you next time, and remember, keep on growing.
And that was the theme from the television series, The Walking Dead. And you can check it out on Netflix or Amazon. What's interesting about The Walking Dead is there's been an apocalypse, and government, matter of fact, governments of the world have collapsed. No local government, no state government, no federal government. And you can't call the police because the police don't exist. So people are basically fending for themselves. Now, in the process of The Walking Dead, people meet each other, band together in social groups, and form communities because they got to protect themselves from the walkers. The walkers are the zombies. Which are the living dead. And basically, The Walking Dead are basically, if you although it's a dramatic type thing from Hollywood, it basically, zombies are basically, they eat the living. If you got life in you, if you got productivity in you, they want to eat you. Okay. And you got people like that in real life. In any event, so we haven't hit that point yet. We haven't hit that point yet. Some depending on who you read or listen to, and I believe within the next, I go along. I think within the next 90 days or so, or 90 days or less. Things will be back to normal. That's just what I feel. And then, you know, things will be copacetic for another 10, 15 years or whatever, maybe even 20 years. But I think within 90 days or less. Well, you know what? At the max, 120 days or less. So, what I think will happen is during this downtime is you're going to have some people that are regrouping, buying some time, some people that were facing foreclosure or evictions, they're going to regroup, get their money together, and avoid eviction and foreclosures. You're going to have people that come up with business ideas that will make them rich. That's what I think is happening right now. That's why I played that T.D. Jakes thing at the beginning of the podcast. Because if you make use of your downtime, okay, you can really regroup. Because I look at this as one of these, this is a reset. Just like on your computer, on your phone, or whatever, you occasionally had to reset, reboot, and then reboot. I think that's what's happening right now. In any event, Earth Wealth Energy Solar Village, that's one of the things that we're working on. Now we've given birth to what's going to really make that. Matter of fact, we want to take that on tour. So I don't want to completely let the cat out of the bag as of yet on that. I'd probably like to do it when we've got, you know what, I'm going to be careful what I even say with that. Okay, well, if you didn't see it already, check out the Netflix miniseries, Self-Made. It's based on the life of Madam C.J. Walker and whatnot. In any event, it's about 12 noon here, about two more minutes. Lunchtime for those who want to eat lunch. And that note, I'm going to not cut it short, but end it for today. You guys have a good rest of the day. See you tomorrow.